This episode is brought to you by VMGVinyl.com. Professional record cleaning, restoration, rejuvenation, and grading.
Refresh your records with VMGVinyl.com.
And with that, on with the show. Well, hello, everybody. It's Nate. Welcome to episode 421 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. And today we've got on the show DC music legend and all-around great guy, Mr. Pete Stahl of the band Scream. Now, today we cover a lot of ground with Pete, from the early days and the records in the Stahl household, the early punk shows in the DC scene, recording Still Screaming and putting out the first LP on Discord Records, memories of the record-stuffing parties from the Discord house, Dave Grohl joining the band, then leaving for Nirvana, and of course, the latest Scream LP, DC Special, available to order now, discord.com, or ask your local record shop for a copy. We want to make sure we keep those guys in business as well, you know. One song from DC Special is on streaming services now. Go check it out and set yourself up to get the full album the day it comes out. There's also a video and, of course, vinyl at discord.com. All sorts of special guests on this one, including Brian Baker, Dave Grohl, Ian MacKay, tons more. DC Special, discord.com. And hey, peoples, I want to tempt you into joining our Patreon community, patreon.com/vinylguide. There is an extended version of this interview with Pete up at patreon.com/vinylguide. And all the Vinyl Guide Patreon legends know there's tons of extra stuff up there just for supporters of this podcast. Extended episodes, commercial-free episodes, high resolution, and you get the interviews and information earlier, so you get faster and earlier access to releases that we discuss here on the show. Just head up there now, patreon.com/vinylguide. Join our cult and enjoy all the extras. And one final thing, I want to encourage all newbies to the show to make sure you follow the Vinyl Guide podcast in your smartphone app. There's a little arrow that you tick to make sure you get future episodes of The Vinyl Guide immediately and for free, including episodes like Joey Cape of Lagwagon, episode 419, Peter Hook of Joy Division, episode 412, Jay Maskus of Dinosaur Jr., episode 393, Dimitri Coates of Off, episode 389, Jerry A. of Poison Idea, episode 372, East Bay Ray of Dead Kennedys, episode 355, and heaps more. Follow the Vinyl Guide podcast for free and enjoy these interviews and hundreds more anytime. And with that done, let's get into our conversation with Pete Stahl about the history of Scream and DC Special. This week on The Vinyl Guide, Mr. Peter Stahl of the band Scream. They're celebrating a brand new album, DC Special, out November 11th on Discord Records. Pete, welcome to the show, mate. I've always wanted to have you on. So glad we finally get a chance to talk.
How you doing, Nate? Glad to be here. I see you have a Melvin shirt on.
You know what? That's like half my wardrobe is Melvin shirts. Hey. Yeah, even my kids are wearing Melvin shirts. Yeah, we're a bit of a Melvin's family.
Rad, that's cool. And this show is about vinyl, and a lot of vinyl geeks and nerds tune in.
That's right. That's right. Are you, you count yourselves among those ranks?
You know what? I used to be when I was a kid, but ever since I started touring like 40 years ago, my record collection kind of gets farther and farther away from me all the time.
It's pretty heavy. You can't put it on a bus.
My prime time years were like from 10 till about 21, which pretty much is when I started touring. And ever since then, I mean, I get reunited with my collection every so often. Right now it's sitting in the desert. Luckily it's not melting, but, all my stuff's, at my place out in Landers, California right now.
Oh, is that, like Joshua Tree? Okay. Got it. Okay. Yeah.
But I wanted to hit you off with a trivia question right off the bat since you got the Melvin shirt on.
Please.
Did you know that one of the Melvins put out a single by one of my bands?
Okay. Which band?
Wool.
Wool. Okay. One of the Melvins did. Okay. All right. Well, the choice is pretty narrow, either Buzz or Dale, I would say. So I'm going to go with the non-obvious
choice. They've had a lot of members in that. They've had a lot of bass players, though, dude. Come on.
I know. But again, if we're talking Melvins, I'm trying to use logic here. I'm going to say Dale. I'm going to go unconventional. I'm going to go Dale.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
I love Dale. I hope he's recovering well right now. I know he had that surgery. So I'll hope he gets back behind that drum throne soon.
Yeah, I saw him last year.
He can play a mean guitar too, though.
Oh yeah. Well, he was playing. I saw him. He was actually playing with two bands on the bill: Melvins, of course, headlining, but also Harsh Mellow, who was opening. So he was doing two sets a night, and this is in 2022, I think. So, yeah, God bless him. He's got quite a few miles on him, and I hope he has quite a few more.
Yeah, man. Same here. No, it was Buzz.
It was Buzz. Okay. So mm-hmm. He put it out. Now, how did that record happen?
Well, it was right when we were first starting out, and we'd known Melvin's guys for a long time. Scream had like played shows in and around them up in the Seattle area back in the day. And then we did a tour with the Melvins with Wool and with L7, Wool and Melvins. We did a national tour. Mm-hmm. Well, right when we were starting out, we had some demos, and Buzz ended up putting out a couple songs from it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had a label called Fuck You Records.
That sounds about right.
So I don't know. I still have a couple copies somewhere, and it's the A side is A Little Darling, which my brother sings. And I can't remember what was on the B side, but it's a good little ditty. I'm gonna check it out.
Okay, yeah. I'm gonna have to investigate that.
We don't have many recordings, you know. Even though my brother and I have been in two bands, I tend to like hog all the vocals, you know, the lead vocals. But when he's got a great voice, and he sings a song on a new record too. So,
all right. Well, I love learning new stuff, so I'm definitely gonna be. Looking into that record, and if it is your work plus Buzz's fingerprints are on it, that's definitely something's probably
it's got a pretty cool little cover too.
So going back in time, I would imagine the Stahl household was full of records and music and art, or at least artistic pursuits. Would that be fair?
Well, definitely full of records. I don't remember much. My mom's from Holland. My dad was from New York area, and fortunately they split up early. And my mom raised us, and my dad was kind of in and out the picture. But he was also really influential as far as teaching us about music. He managed rock bands in the mid '60s, and used to take us to some shows in town, and that had a huge impact on my brother and I as far as music and, you know, lighting a fire and catching a bug about starting. I mean, the first records I remember seeing in my parents' hi-fi, which was like one of those old Grundigs, would be like Tranny Lopez Live at PJ's, you know, stuff like that. I don't know. I think my dad was way into Tranny Lopez, but I remember a bunch of his records.
Okay. When managing bands, I mean, was there a lot of like musicians around as well? You know, did he hang with musicians?
Yeah. I mean, I was like 10 and my brother's like 8. He used to take us to shows, and then we would hang out with them, and they had band apartments, I think, and we used to hang with them. And those are like really indelible memories in my mind, seeing them play at these shows. You know, their fans giving us notes to give to the band because we could get to them, or seeing the drummer like his playing. You know, they used to play a couple sets. They even played it at our church, our local church that we would go to. Used to see him play there. This band called The Hangman, which had like they were on Monument Records. They actually piled into a hearse. They had a hearse, The Hangman, drove down to Nashville and recorded there at Monument. It was I'm not sure what studio, but it ended up being on Monument Records.
Okay, so very early on, you caught the bug of, like, you saw the live music, probably the way it was also impacting your dad.
The other thing that we saw and that we kind of took in was that the DIY attitude as far as, you know, making flyers and putting up posters around town for your shows and collectively being in a band and making shit happen. And you know, and also just growing up in D.C., you're kind of immersed in the, like, a little political aspect of it too. That's because everyone that works for the government, or you're like, you know, you're around all the monuments, or it's a common topic. And then you have, you know, there's always, especially at that time when my dad's band was starting out, there was quite a good bit of activism going on too, that we would kind of see, you know, with demonstrations and rallies and stuff.
So when did you become aware of punk?
Through the radio, I think. Most some radio stations were really great educators for me. I mean, I guess always have been. Growing up, I listened to AM radio, and even like my dad partnered up with some local DJs to help get his band off the ground. So, and I remember one DJ in particular, his name was Cousin Duffy, and they used to put out these compilations for those local radio stations, which were kind of similar to like the Pebbles compilations and stuff. So we started learning about garage punk through those kind of early compilations of top AM hits, you know. I guess, but as far as punk and new wave, it was like a couple particular radio stations and radio shows. A show called the Mystic Eye Show. Steve Lorber was a DJ on WHFS, which was a great station at the time. It's now, you know, part of some big corporation. Or there, one good thing about DC, there's a lot of universities, and so there's some good radio stations on the local universities, whether Georgetown University or American University. And those stations all had like kind of new music programs, and or also learn about the blues or bluegrass or jazz, you know. Got a pretty eclectic knowledge of music through it. I remember listening to Iggy Pop on the Mystic Eye Show. It would be my first kind of like, you know, introduction to punk, I think.
As you started bringing punk home, you know, garage bands going into hardcore.
I would bring punk home this way. I would, because I was a couple years older than my brother. My Scream basically came out of high school. I mean, we, late 70s, my brother and Enoch Skeeter, Enoch Thompson and Kent, they were playing in different outfits at school in Bayless Crossroads Falls Church area. And when they got a band together and asked me to sing for them, I was already hitting clubs. They weren't old enough to go to nightclubs. And so I was already going into town and seeing local DC bands and new wave bands mostly, and I would call, I would, you know, get on the phone in between sets and call back to the house and talk to Franz and Skeeter and say, hey, check this out, listen to this, you know, and I'd hold the phone up so they could hear the band and stuff. So that's how I started bringing punk into the house.
They were living vicariously through you there.
Yeah, but it wasn't, I mean, that was also at the same time that we were like starting to play shows and people in our basement to people, you know, friends at school or friends in the neighborhood come hang out and watch us practice. Or then we moved into playing people's parties and backyards and stuff. And then finally we started playing some of the little clubs in town.
When did you start to get involved with the team that became Discord? Were they already Discord when you
met? Yeah, they had put out a series of 7 inches, and we had already done one tour. We were kind of on our second evolution of like the batches of songs that we'd written. And we did a little tour around the U.S. with Government Issue. And, when we came back from that, we were pretty much on fire after, you know, how, if you're probably a musician too, right?
A really bad one. Oh. I stopped a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, when you, after you go on tour, you're usually pretty ready to roll into the studio. And so, he caught us after we came off tour. I remember Ian came down to a show at the Stone Hearth, which was a place in Maryland that we played. And he asked us if we wanted to do a record, which was, we were so excited about it because we were from the, you know, like they're just right outside of DC, and the DC punk scene kind of came out of the smaller scene. It was kind of in DC proper, Northwest Washington in particular, you know, a lot of the kids and people, they all kind of went to the same high schools and stuff in this one localized area. we were kind of from a little outer band of that, but we kind of weren't part of that scene at that time. And so that was really our you know, we got our foot in the door that way to start playing more shows with those kind of bands and stuff.
So you came to Discord with all these songs pretty much ready. You hadn't had a single before then.
No, we'd done a demo. And coincidentally, our first demo we did at In Your Ear Studios, which is where we did our first record and also where we did our last record just 2 years ago that's coming out on November 10th. That's really been our, our home for, we branched out and recorded over the years at different places, but Inner Ear was where we started. Yeah, and so we went into that basement studio, which was at their house, and which coincidentally my brother and I had lived on that street in a few years earlier. We lived on that same street just a few houses down from where Inner Ear was and still is. And so it was real familiar for us when we went to that studio because the basement was the same layout as our house, you know. So it was very, very, very comfortable and still is.
It's kind of funny with the DC scene, and I'm not sure how many other scenes around the world can say this. A lot of the very core locations and physical touchstones are still there. You know, Inner Ear, yeah. Discord House. You know, a few things are almost frozen in amber.
Oh, I know, and I think there's, it's strange. Every time I go to Detroit. I drive the few blocks. It usually is just right outside of, to go to Motown and just go downstairs and check that studio out there. It's just a row house that, eventually became a huge empire. And that was a real localized scene too. Like if you ever listen to interviews from, I just listened to a great interview recently with Smokey Robbins, Smokey Robinson, who just put out a new record at 83, by the way. And it's actually, his voice sounds amazing. There's some good songs on it too. And he talks about, his neighbors were Aretha Franklin or, all those folks, So that, I think that a lot of scenes have similar kind of incubators, like Discord, Inner Ear, or like Motown. It even goes, and DC has a really strong R&B foundation too, and roots foundation too, with people like Marvin Gaye who lived there, or like the Go Go scene, which is pretty much DC music, and then Motown has soul and R&B, but then it also then you have Iggy Pop, and then you also have bands like Death. That was a early punk band out of Detroit. So very vibrant music scenes in each place. And then if you like roll into Southern rock and, or down, you got Stax or Sun, they all kind of came from little one room buildings,
Yeah. Small communities. Yeah. But a lot of those things have kind of been torn. I think Sun's still there. And of course, Chess Records. But Stax was torn down and then they realized the importance of it and built it again. And, a lot of, CBGB's is a clothing store now, whatever I hear about the DC scene, it's like, it's nice to know that those things still,
on our record, we were one of the last bands to record at the second location and now he's back at the original location. So yeah, that's still there and he's still working. And then in Discord's still there too.
So the new record, is this a reboot? Is this a finale? How are you viewing the new album?
Oh man. Definitely. I wouldn't say it's a reboot or a finale. We have, several tours lined up already. We're getting ready to go out, in about a month with Soulside. Before the record comes out, and it comes out in November, and then we have another short trip with them in December, and then hope to do some more traveling. I don't know if we'll ever make it to Australia, though. That's always been a dream of ours. But we've been consistently playing, the last 10, 15 years. But our last record, we put an EP out on 2011 on Side One Dummy, called Complete Control Sessions. It was kind of like a live recording. And but yeah, this will be the first full length record in like over 30 years.
You went big on it, and to me, it's, you know, coming back to Discord, it's almost like when Descendants went back to Epitaph. You know, right. You know, it's like there's a home base for them, and that's kind of how I read this album. We've been around the world now, but we're coming back home, and we're going to go big.
Yeah, we had kind of a plan in mind that we wanted to kind of tell the band's story through like what I just told you, like where we come from, to kind of celebrate our community that shaped us, basically, you know, like starting with my father's band and some of the music even before from that area. And we were able to do this by collaborating with people from the different kind of eras that had really particularly influenced us, whether it be from the 60s or the new wave era, and bands that we'd go see that inspired us, and then into the hardcore time where we started out at, and where the people that we play with now. So there's a lot of guest artists that we were able to rally and get together and collaborate with. And so what we wanted to do was like come up with a record of new music to kind of, to like illuminate this rich history we feel we have and where we come from, and highlight that, and to, you know, bring it forward into now, into 2024 when this comes out, is that, you know, still happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we now still have things to say.
Now, there's the recent passing of Kent Stacks.
Real recent. It just happened last week. And you know, I just think, wake up in the morning just thinking about it, how fast it went, even though he had been sick for a long time. And we've already, like, this is like the second, it's over 2 years that he was been battling that cancer. So it, you know, it wasn't we were always kind of hoping that he could kind of bounce back after these treatments. And he did play with us as recently as like 2 or 3 months ago. We played at a show down to celebrate the book release, that Inner Ear book that just came out. And he sat in with us, and then we just played this past Sunday at Martin Luther King Library with Trouble Funk and some other new bands from DC. It was really cool, and some punk bands and some go-go bands. And I was hoping he'd be able to sit in with us there, but you know, it just didn't happen. But yeah, it's a sad time that we're trying to still kind of get through. And but the record is great for, I think it just kind of further showcases his drumming, because he's still, like I said, there's a lot of collaborators on it, and there's several drummers that play on this record, but the core record is me, my brother, and Kent and Skeeter.
Mm-hmm. When making this record, did the band know that Kent's time was pretty limited? Was it a bit of a...
No, we did. He was diagnosed shortly after we recorded the record in September, and then he was diagnosed the following February. Right. And then the reason why it's taken so long, in case you were going to ask that, was because the studio got closed down by the city. Arlington County had condemned the building. So then he had to, which is one reason why we quickly kind of went in there. We'd been talking about doing this project for a while. So we got in and recorded it the last month it was open. And then it was got shut down, and he had to move back to his basement and start all over and rewire everything. And so then we had to wait till that was
right. Well, look, after the last few years, I'm so used to waiting for things. It doesn't matter. So with Still Screaming, when that record came out, there were about 3,500 that were made. Do you remember them selling well? Like, did you sell them at gigs? Were they all in stores? How do you remember those kind of making their way out to the public?
That's a good question. I don't have a good answer for you. I mean, they did a lot of stuff by mail order back then. And a lot of it was direct that way. We're still pretty, you know, underground, that scene. And so just that your, you know, different, you know, select stores in every city would maybe have a copy or two. They didn't really have any European distribution yet. I think that, you know, some distributors over there would purchase it. But later on, Discord eventually, as they grew, linked up with Southern Studios, which they started Southern Distribution, which is, I think, called SDR, which is still around.
Okay.
And that's when it started getting more international that way. But I think when it first started, it was just like small little mom and pop stores across the country. And mail order, I think, was still a big component of how those sold. We didn't sell that many at shows because that would involve us buying a bunch, which we didn't have no money. And then, we've never been a big merch band. I mean, we usually make t-shirts and, you know, but we will have the new record available for sale at our next show for sure. And actually, even though you vinyl junkies might not be interested, we did negotiate with Discord to make a CD too. So, which mm-hmm. is the CD will have all 18 songs from the session. The vinyl will only have 12.
Ah, okay, all right.
You know how it works. If you put too much information on the record, then it doesn't sound as good.
We're used to that. There are pros and cons, and yeah, we don't dislike CDs. It's, you know, physical form media is something that I think is kind of core within us. But albums, that tends to be the preferred format.
Hell yeah, for me too. But you know, I grew up when you bought records for $5.99 and $7.99, you know? So these days, vinyl's just, it's kind of out of my price range, you know? And I wanted to be able to, obviously it's great to have, you know, these digital platforms like Bandcamp and Discord where you can buy the record directly and buy it digitally from them. And that's what we support and kind of hope to drive people to. We got the vinyl because I also just kind of like how the vinyl flows. You know, we kind of put the record together thinking of it as a vinyl piece, you know?
Right.
And also conceptually. So, which I think you'll hear when you listen to the record, the vinyl. The vinyl flows, it flows together more than the CD does, put it that way.
Okay. Well, look, I'm looking at Discord.com right now, and the record, I mean, Discord's always been known for pricing very fairly, perhaps even, you know, cheaper than just about any other record you can get. $20 for a vinyl record.
Yeah, that's what and that's what Ian told me. I asked him what we should sell it for at show, and that's what he said. But then with the CD, I'm hoping we'll be able to offer that at shows for people that still have CD players, which
yep.
And if we'll be able to offer it for $10. So it'll be nice to have an option for people, you know, a lower price option too. And because, you know, want to make it possible for anybody to buy a record.
Yeah. Well, right now, Discord.com, you could buy the record and the CD, $20 and $12. So for $32, which is both of them is still cheaper than going out to a shop and buying a different record. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. But so, I do want to support all the, you know, those local stores that sell vinyl because, you know, it's usually music lovers and people that support local music, you know, that have those.
Yeah. Well, I think the retail of this will probably stay relatively low. I guess, you know, when you compare it to any other artist right now, this is incredibly reasonable, especially with all the different artists you have on it. Mark Cizeros, you know, Dave Grohl, Ian, Joe Lally, you know, a lot of great names there. One question I want to ask you about is we had Tesco V on the show some time ago. He told us the story of him driving to New York for the Fear appearance on Saturday Night Live and swinging through Maryland and DC, picking up a bunch of friends to do that. Were you part of that crew? Were you involved at all?
I wasn't in that mix. No, I watched it on TV like most people. Unfortunately, I was not.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I wasn't sure who, because
I think, you know, what else did he say, illuminate anything like how that all came about or
Yeah, I can send you the link to the interview if
okay,
you want.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
He's got some of his facts a little bit wrong. I think he said Henry was there, and then I talked to Henry, and Henry's like, I wasn't there, you know. But if you watch that video, you can see Tesco's blonde little head bouncing around there, and I wasn't sure who else, you know, in the community was there.
Yeah, no, that there was some. That was mostly people local punkers from the scene for sure. Like that core scene I was telling you about that kind of really hatched a scene, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, with Still Screaming, do you recall the band being really happy with the reception of the record? Were you satisfied? Were you frustrated with it? What was the reaction at the time?
No, man. It was a blur recording. Now, we did it. We recorded and mixed all 21 songs in 3 days. So, and it was just a joy to have the opportunity to do that and get our music out. And then, you know, start touring around. We were always like, you know, compared to a lot of the other bands from our town, we did a lot of touring. So it was good to have a record to tour behind. So.
And what did a tour look like for you guys? All over the country? Were you out, you know, 250 days a year? What did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, there's a great network of local promoters in each city. The early 80s is just pretty vibrant hardcore scene across the whole country. And so it would look like me calling up these local promoters and setting up shows and us piling into the van and, you know, just getting out there and doing it.
Were there a lot of overseas shows? Up through Canada, go to the...
Later on, we started going overseas around 1986, and kind of same approach, kind of, like I said, Discord had partnered up with Southern Studios to distribute their stuff, and the owner of that studio, his name was John Loader, passed away since then, and he had a really cool studio there, and then they had this distribution that they came out of that studio, and he gave me a small little office with a desk and a telephone, and so I went over there and, you know, started making phone calls to people. I gotten their names and numbers through Maximum Rock and Roll or, you know, magazine, and through the people that ran the distribution there, and I would just, you know, call record stores around Europe and ask who was doing the show, and then they hooked me up with them, and they, oh, you call back here in a couple of days, you'll be here. And then, you know, that's how the network worked, and that's how it was in the States too. A lot of the promoters for shows would work at the local record store, and you'd have to call the local record store because nobody had cell phones, and you have to call the record store when they were there, when they were working, and then show that way. So, and it was great.
There were several albums with Discord.
Yeah, we did. Still Screaming was the first record. It came out January of 83. It was recorded like 82. And then we did This Side Up, which was half of it was recorded in Maryland at the studio by this guy, Ray Tilkins. We did that with Dr. No from the Bad Brains. He was there during that session and kind of helped us produced it, basically, with Ray. And then the other half of it, we did back at Inner Ear with Joe Picuri, Joey P, who was our sound guy. He was kind of, him and Don kind of recorded that side of the record. And then the third record was Banging the Drum, and that we recorded at John Loader's studio in London, half of it. And just like This Side Up, the other half was recorded back at Inner Ear. That's how those first three were done. And then we did one record for Ross Records after that, which was a local reggae label, a record called No More Censorship. And this would have been after Dave. That was the first record with Dave Grohl on drums. And then we did one more after that. Went back to Discord, did another record, them called Fumble. And that was recorded at Inner Ear, the one that on Oakland in Oakland Street in Arlington, which is the one that just got shut down.
Mm. Okay.
That's it. And, you know, we only ever really put out one single. Scream only put out one. No, we put out two singles. We did one single for a French label called Jungle Hop. And that is like Walking by Myself. It's on one side. And then there's an acoustic version of Choke Word. Both those songs are on Banging the Drum. That came about through touring in Europe. Through that Southern Studios connection, like you were talking about touring in Europe, like at that time, you know, the hardcore scene was kind of really happening in Europe. And then, you know, we did like 9 or 10 shows in France in 1986, which was kind of virtually unheard of in that,
wow,
that time.
So the cover of Still Screaming, the artwork is quite iconic. What, mm-hmm, what are your recollections of that, the visuals for that record?
Well, I mean, a cool thing about that, that it's kind of interesting, and I don't know if you put it together, but that artwork was drawn by Tomas Squip at the time, was his name, and who ended up being the guitar. He's formed a band called Beefeater and Fidelity Jones. And but I mean, I remember us talking about, he presented that artwork for us, and I frankly don't remember how we engaged him to do it, or if he just came to us, but we felt he was part of our scene, and you know, we made that the first record cover, so I don't know.
Yeah.
And in the back of it is a picture of us at Meridian Park, which is also called Malcolm X Park. And my friend Mimi Bauman shot that photograph. And I write about that in our new record. There's a song called Lifeline that I kind of use that picture, like us taking that photograph then at that place, as like a starting point for us, and telling a story in that song about that. That park was kind of a starting, like a place, like Big Tony from Trouble Funk. I met him a few years ago through Dave Grohl making that movie Sonic, that film, or the television show Sonic Highways. And we did like a little, we drove around town looking at places where Trouble Funk had first started out, like the Ibex Club and places like that. So old haunts where Trouble Funk used to play or where they started out. And we drove by that same place where we had taken that picture that's on the back of Still Screaming. And he's like, oh, this is where I got my first guitar, right here at this corner. This guy was selling a guitar, and I was like, he was like 14. And so I was like, my shit, we took our first band picture here. So then we wrote a song called Lifeline that's on the new record that kind of tells that story of us all kind of starting from there and then pursuing our dreams as a band and musicians from there. But what I was go back to is, and this was never really like a planned thing, but then like, the third, Banging the Drum, the front cover for Banging the Drum was also, Tomas did that cover too. He took the photograph and then he like kind of treated it. If you look at that record cover, it has some really cool coloring on it. And he did that. He also kind of treated, same with No More Censorship. He treated the pictures from that too. And then Fumble, he did the cover for Fumble too.
Yeah.
So he's been involved. It's just kind of happened at in a strange way. It just kind of has happened that way. And then actually he appears on our new record playing guitar, which he's very unique player, shreds. And and he also contributed a great like monologue kind of rant at the end of one of the songs. It's a very informative and amazing.
Oh,
okay. Song called Represent. So yeah, he's a big part of our band in that way. But I think it's also just a perfect example of our community and the collaborativeness of this project.
No, it seems like the new album, it feels to me like it's almost a love letter to your past. You know, the people who have been these signposts on the way throughout your career. And that's why I thought, like, what a lovingly way to, you know, kind of represent that.
Yeah. It's the name of the song, too.
Oh. early on, you were talking about DIY. So some of the DIY stuff, it was still screaming. Did you guys have to stuff the records in? Because I know they came with inserts. They came with the little – there's one of
them. Yeah, I do recall helping out with that kind of thing. Yeah, for sure. We helped put the artwork together with everybody. And I do remember having some record stuff and parties, for that record and also for subsequent records as well.
Yeah, because in that first album, there's the lyric sheet. There's also in many of them, there's a flyer promotion for the Minor Threat. I think it may be a 12-inch EP.
The mail order flyers that they
were. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what. Yeah, I think they did a lot of business through mail order, and that's why. That's how we communicated. It says in big type on the back of our record, P.O. Box 49, whatever.
Yeah.
West Church, Virginia. And we used to get a lot of mail back in the day.
So there's that famous letter that Dave Grohl sent to Ian to connect him with any bands that may need a drummer. Is that how he got introduced to Scream? How did Dave enter the picture?
We'll be back after these messages.
Well, hey there, record collectors. There's a new service available that specializes in record cleaning, restoring, sticker removal, and professional grading.
VMGVinyl.com.
VMG Vinyl can help you make the most of your collectible records. From professional cleaning of records and sleeves,
removing old price tags and store stickers,
dry cleaning and rejuvenation of old shrink wrap to make it look like new, even providing you a professional play-tested third-party grade with either removable grading or encasing in plastic, you have a wide range of choices at VMGVinyl.com.
Buying a highly collectible record and you want it checked out by an expert?
VMG Vinyl can do that too. Head over there now and see what VMGVinyl.com can do for you and your collection. That's VMGVinyl.com, the one-stop shop for professional third-party grading, cleaning, and record restoration. That's VMGVinyl.com.
Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. So there's that famous letter that Dave Grohl sent to Ian to connect him with any bands that may need a drummer. Is that how he got introduced to Scream? How did Dave enter the picture?
Yeah, well, he had seen it. Apparently, we put ads around town, like some flyers at a couple of different music stores. One of them was one in our neighborhood called Rolls Music, where we would go up and buy strings and stuff. And that was in Falls Church, and that was a store that he went to. So he saw an ad there. But I remember that we went, Kent, he was planning on leaving the band because him and his wife were going to have their first kid, and that's what he wanted to focus on. So then Skeeter told me about Dave, it's about this kid that played in Dane Bramage. And so when we went down to see him play, and, it just kind of was, at DC Space, which was one of the places we used to play a lot, really cool venue. And really small and intimate, and everyone was just kind of captivated by his drumming, and so we asked him if he wanted to play with us, and I think he was looking to branch out and do he's already at that time maybe ambitious, and so he jumped at the chance to jam with us, and then we once we started playing with him, it was obvious from the first couple songs, he's incredible.
Was he already wanting to contribute, like lyrically and melody beyond the drums?
No, pretty soon afterwards, but no, initially he just, I think he was just stoked to be able to show what he could do, you know, and he knew all the songs and kind of gave, you know, gave us some renewed energy and pushed us to kind of branch out and kind of, we're always like, you know, if you're familiar with our records, they kind of cross the gamut of different styles, and our new records are not any different than that. So, you know, his power and his style was new for us, and it kind of pushed us in different directions, you know, a little more heavier. But yeah, as we became, you know, friends and family, he started writing, and he was already, you know, even then, you know, pretty soon after that, he was already, you know, had some side projects going, you know, so.
Yeah.
Really prolific.
Ambitious is another. Yeah. He's, mm-hmm. yeah. He doesn't like to be bored, it sounds like. No. So how did he break the news to the band that he was being recruited to join Nirvana?
Through me. We're just, I guess, checking up on each other. Cause we were in Los Angeles in the middle of a tour, and our bass player had some issues and left to go home to deal with them, which we still had half the tour to finish. And then he, at that time, your friends there in the Melvins, they were looking for a drummer, and because they had been, you know, having different drummers, and I'm sorry, Nirvana had been using Dale, and the Melvins had, I think they hipped him to Dave, and they asked, Nirvana called and asked if he could come up and play a show, or, you know, fill in for some shows. And he went up in there and did that. And then he called down and said he was going to join the band. And I, you know, kind of, from what I remember, I encouraged him, I should do that, you know, because it was a good opportunity. We were kind of nothing was really happening for us at that time. We were starting to look for a bass player when he went up there. But, you know, I think we were all kind of ready to move on and do something else.
Mm. Okay. Because I think there was a story about Kurt seeing Dave play drums, likely in Scream, and said, that's the sort of drummer I want. I want a drummer like that dude.
I seem...
Again, that may be a rumor.
I remember Kurt coming to one of the shows with Buzz and them. So in San Francisco on that last trip, I do remember that.
Got it. Okay. And it's nice that you guys have held your friendship over so many years. And I think if I understand the story correctly, the song, Foo Fighters song, There Goes My Hero, he thinks of you when he was creating that song, or you were one of that, that tapestry of heroes that he was thinking of.
Okay, well, that's nice to hear, but I don't know about that. But.
Well, that's what he said. Those were his words. You really seem to have shepherded him into what he's blossomed into a quite an incredible career.
Well, I mean, I think we traveled a lot on the road together. All of us were family and learned from each other, you know. So,
and he's kept engaged. He's been involved in the reissues. His studio, you know, the tapes of Scream. He's done remixes. Yeah. You know, he continues to be part of that community.
Very, very supportive throughout the years. Yeah. So, and he's busy.
Yeah, he is. So tell me about pulling together all the guests in DC Special. That must have been quite a Herculean task.
Yeah, well, you know, at first I started out by coming up, you know, discussing with my brother and kind of, you know, writing down our thoughts and what we wanted to do. And then I had, you know, we had written a bunch of songs. This was also kind of in and out during the pandemic. So I had a lot of this stuff, most of the lyrics and a lot of the songs written, me and my brother did. So made like a little, you know, lyric book with kind of a manifesto or a statement, mission statement, that kind of conceptualized the record into, you know, got it into words of what we wanted to do. And then I made, like, I don't know, like 20 or 25 handmade books. And then we mailed them out to people that we wanted to collaborate with. And so that's how we first started with it. And you know, most of the people responded really positively. And so when it came around time to do recording, everyone just kind of showed up. And some people didn't show up because of whatever, they couldn't make it. Like, I did reach out to Big Tony from Trouble Funk, but at the time he wasn't able to participate. I reached out to, like, some of the guys from the Bad Brains, and, you know, because they were, like, a huge influence on our band and frankly, the whole scene. And we actually ended up recording a song that Daryl from the Bad Brains had written, and that I wrote the lyrics for, called Bored to Life. And that's on the record. But he didn't actually appear on it, but gave his blessing that we could use that song.
When it comes to the Scream legacy and all the tapes and recordings and whatnot, do you have all of that, or do you know where it's at? Is there anything missing?
Yeah, there is stuff missing that I really regret. Like, not, there was a whole collection of songs that we wrote and played when we first started out. And, you know, I still know the titles of them, like a song called Brainwash, or a song called It Ain't Right, or, yeah. They were like a collection of songs we wrote before we kind of really got turned on to, like, hardcore. So they're more like new wavey and punky and rock, garagey. And so I wish we would have recorded those. I have never even really been able to find any basement, you know, party tapes or anything. So I wish I would have had those. But as you noted earlier about Discord being exactly how it was, you know, 40 years ago, the house, Ian is a real archivist, and he has a lot of our early, all the reel to reels and all that he has in a vault that's kind of a new addition, that he has like a proper vault that has all the tapes and everything, climate controlled. And
yeah. He's such a forward thinker. He knew it was important back before I think a lot of people realized that it was how special that scene was.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And he's kept every little, kept, like you said, that letter that Dave wrote. You know, I wish I had those letters that used to come to our P.O. box, but I have a few. But, you know, in my journey from East Coast to West Coast, I lost a lot of them.
Yeah, it just kind of falls to the wind. You think, oh, what am I going to use this box of stuff for? And not realizing how precious those memories are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but you kept your record collection, which is good. Yep. What sort of gems do you have in your record collection?
Gems. I don't know if I have a lot of the same records because I just will wear them out and then I'll buy them over again. I have a huge, like, Southern rock collection, a lot of Allman Brothers, Skynyrd, Marshall Tucker, all that stuff.
Do you still play your records? Do you still got a record player?
Oh, yeah.
You pull it out?
Yeah, I still have my stereo from when I bought when I was 16 years old. I have a Pioneer 838 and an old Phillips turntable, and that receiver is a little janky, but it sounds great when I can get it running. Yeah, so I still have quite a collection of stuff. Still, some of it's still in boxes, but, you know, I have a pretty good, you know, some good jazz records. I was way into, like, Larry Coryell and the 11th House, John Abercrombie, Mob, and you know, all that fusion stuff. Mm-hmm. Brand X.
Do you still have a lot of the old punk singles, the early Discord stuff, or Bad Brains, Pay to Come, any of those sort of old singles?
I do have a few singles. Yeah, I have a pretty good, mostly like old, like a lot of old Motown singles that I've collected, or, you know, old Stax, like Joe Tex. But I didn't collect a lot of the hardcore singles, but I have accumulated a few, but I'll never part with them, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, I was just going to say, I don't know how much you keep up on record collections and that sort of thing, but there's some of those records that are exceedingly rare and you probably want to be very careful with because some of them can be these days sell for about as much as my car is worth. So you may want to have those appraised at some point if you've been collecting for a couple of decades.
But yeah, like I was saying when we started our conversation, I was a pretty avid record collector from, you know, especially like from when I was about 14 till I was about 21. And then I can pretty much, that's when I started touring and then I was never one of those guys that, you know, and I've been in a bunch of bands touring around and also, you know, became a tour manager, which kind of do the pay the bills in between tours. So I'm always on the road and I'm not one of those guys that has time to go to record stores while we're there in each city. I just always kind of focused on the tour. And so most of my records that I would get over the years are, you know, people that we tour with and bands and friends and, you know, support my friends' bands and stuff, you know. I mean, like the most recent records I've gotten would be that new Hammered Halls record on Discord, or my buddies in LA had this band called Bluebird. They just reissued their vinyl. And my friend Steve O'Malley, who's in the band Sunno, has a label called Ideologic Organ that he sends me some records every now and then. And, you know, I'm lucky. My buddy Greg Anderson has a killer label called Southern Lord, and I can get records from him. So, but I haven't really been able to. I don't really get out to record stores much to purchase records. Luckily, I'm able to accumulate some through my friends, the graciousness of my friends.
Yeah, they sort you out. No,
I also trade my records for their records. So,
mm-hmm. Oh, that's always fun. That's always fun. I've got friends. I'll send you a random box of five. You send me a random box of five. Let's learn something. So do you want to do a random box of five, Pete?
Yeah, sure, man.
Okay. All right. We'll exchange information. I'll get you some records. You get me some records and we'll have a little fun on this.
Yeah, do that. I got some friends. I work with those fine rock band called L7. And
yes.
I know they're coming to Australia in before the end of the year, and I could give them the five. I could give it to them.
I think I'm gonna catch up with Danita while she's here. So yeah, that'll save you the shipping.
Okay, yeah, that'll save me.
They'll be our mule, our record mule.
There you go. So,
cool. So, Peter, we've got the DC special album coming out. It's November 11th. I think we talked about it's on Discord. The title DC special, it just, again, it rings to me like it's a, you know, it's something that is, I'm sure the band is extremely proud of. Tell me about the concept and kind of creating DC special.
Well, you know, the first step was, like I said, reaching out to the people that that we respected and have influenced and that we wanted to be a part of making the record with, which goes back all the way to the drummer in my dad's band, The Hangman, Bob Berberick. Him and his wife play on a song. And Martha was a singer in this band called The Deceits, which was a band I used to go see. So then people like that through our whole history of being in a band, you know, that have influenced us and inspired us. We were able to gather a collection of people to join with us and make the record together. And then the artwork kind of collaborated with MICA, which is American Maryland Institute College Art and Design. They hold the old Globe collection posters and stuff you're probably familiar with. And I had never seen an album cover that kind of utilized that Globe poster. And so when we did the Kickstarter, we made a poster and it just seemed to me like we should have the album cover kind of look like that poster. And the people there at MICA, Allison Fisher, they helped us design that. And then our friend Jason Farrell, who's also part of the Discord community and been in some bands on Discord, he laid it out for us. And then, you know, it was, like I said, we recorded it at the studio in her ear. And then the record was actually pressed by Furnace, which is in Alexandria. So it's like every part of the process, it's a local homegrown record.
Oh, that's killer. Because Furnace, I know there's a really good relationship between Discord and Furnace. They did the Discord box set. They're the ones that did the secret box set.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that and we've had the Furnace guys on before telling us all about their process for making records. So it's nice. It's this whole community. It's all right there, very drivable.
I mean, I did branch out a little bit down into Nashville and actually went down to visit Pete Lyman from Infrasonic Mastering. And he mastered a record, but then he also cut the master he has a lathe at his mastering studio that has a very rich history. He got it from Richard Simpson and brought it from LA, and it'd been a lot of famous records had been cut on that machine. He brought it to Nashville, put it in his studio. And when he mastered the record, I went down there and watched him cut the vinyl. So, and that, which was a real educational, real fun.
Mm-hmm. Is that the first time you've been in the room while they're cutting the vinyl?
No, I had been, I actually think I had been in the room where that machine originally, one of the places it originally had been an RCA. Elvis had cut stuff on there. In fact, he told me a story about Elvis actually having it brought from RCA in LA to his house in Palm Springs and then cutting right there, you know, right to the lathe. And Richard Simpson was at RCA at the time. But then when he left RCA, he had his own little mastering and cutting studio in Hollywood at a couple different locations. And I think the early Wool stuff, I don't know if that single that Buzz put out was cut there or not, but I think our first record, Wool's EP, was on Bong Load. I think they cut it there. Yeah.
You already have the test pressings and everything of the record. Yeah.
That's correct. We got the test pressings.
Sounding good, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Now, by the way, yes, I just did a quick look up. Fuck You Records, run by King Buzzo. There were actually three records that were put out on that label. So Mr. Stahl, I'm gonna end this interview by giving you a trivia question. Can you name the one of the other two records that were on Fuck You Records besides Wool?
Acid King.
Would you like to have another guess?
Steel Pole Bathtub.
Nope. One more.
Oh gosh, Mr. Bungle.
No. Okay, it's that's all right. Look, by the way, I just learned about this record label this morning from you. Well, there's no shame in this.
I'm glad that we're able to open and close your show by stumping each other.
Okay, just for the record, the other two, Wool was FU1, so the first record was,
yeah,
FU1. And then it was followed by a band called Angel Rot.
Okay, I recall that.
Yeah, and that single was called Necro Strangle. And then the third and final record was from a band called Plainfield.
Oh yeah,
I remember. Live at the Kennel Club and Meet in DeFolks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. Look, you're always welcome back anytime. We can continue to stump each other with these record nerd questions. Again, I want to point everyone to discord.com, the album DC Special. Get your orders in now. It's only $20 up there at Discord. Of course, you could ask your local record shop to get one in, maybe a couple bucks more, but that's okay too, because we want to make sure we support those local independent record shops. DC Special by Scream out November 11th on Discord. It has a ton of history and love and care and special guests. A lot of the common names you would think of when you think about DC music, Ian MacKay, Brian Baker, of course, Dave Grohl, a lot of different artists there. And you can find out more at discord.com. Pete, thank you so much for coming on the Vinyl Guide, Nate.
Thank you, Nate.
Oh, man. I hope they get to Australia as well. What an absolutely lovely dude. I welcome him back to the show, him and his brother back to the show anytime. And of course, don't forget, there's an extended version of this episode up at patreon.com/vinylguide. Head up there now, join our Patreon cult if you haven't already, and enjoy all the extras. That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Put them on Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter, put them on Threads or X or whatever they're calling it this week. Or better yet, just show your friends how to get The Vinyl Guide podcast on that smartphone of theirs. They'll appreciate it, and I certainly will as well. We'll be back shortly with the brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate at thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram at Vinyl Guide. Until next time, keep spinning.